You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Greetings and welcome to this podcast series entitled Comprehensive Care with HER2 ADCs Across Solid Tumors, Strategies to Enhance Efficacy and Minimize Toxicity. This two-episode series is hosted by Med Learning Group and designed to meet the educational needs of U.S.-based oncology teams, both in the community as well as in university settings. We're interested in educating and learning from oncologists and all members of the multidisciplinary team about the treatment of HER2-positive solid tumors, including, but not limited to, gynecologic, bladder, and biliary tract cancers. My name is Brad Monk. I'm the Medical Director of Late Phase Clinical Research here at Florida Cancer Specialists and Research Institute. I'm here today in West Palm Beach, Florida. I'll be your host, but most importantly, and with my pleasure, I'm going to be joined by one of my very close friends, Susanna Banerjee, who's a consultant medical oncologist and leads the research group at the Royal Marsden in Gynecologic Cancer. Say hello, Susie.
Thank you, Brad. It's a pleasure being here.
The pleasure is all ours, and I really appreciate you carving out a little bit of your time because you're so knowledgeable about this. And you've taught me already a lot of things over the years, but I'm interested to hear your perspective. I think as you are aware that in April 2024, last year, the FDA provided us with accelerated approval. According to a study which we call Destiny Pan Tumor 02, published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, utilizing trastuzumab deruxtecan, or TDXD, for HER2-expressing solid tumors 3+, and I'm sure as you may be aware, it's NCCN recommended for 2+. So I think, you know, we've already talked about the benefits, but what I'd like to do really is to have a deeper dive into the toxicities and adverse events. So maybe you can kick us off with some of the most common adverse events for TDXD.
Thanks, Brad. You know, as you said, the activity of TDXD is across a broad range of HER2-expressing cancers, and many tumors have had limited effective options, so it's a real breakthrough. And in tandem, we need to be vigilant of toxicities. These are different from traditional chemotherapy. And in Destiny Pan Tumor 2, I was very pleased to be an investigator in this trial and co-author, which led to the FDA approval. 267 patients were treated. So common side effects, the most common really being nausea, over to 50%, anemia around a quarter, diarrhea, similar rates around 25%, and vomiting 25%, and also fatigue around the same amount. So these are the more common side effects, but it's also important to recognize less common but more severe toxicities. So grade 3 or higher drug-related adverse events. And these occurred in around 40% of patients, the most common being neutropenia and anemia at around 10%, and more serious drug-related adverse events occurred in just over 10% of patients.
Yeah, so let's break that down. I think maybe you taught me that this is a highly immunogenic chemotherapy and needs to be treated as such. I think we just follow the guidelines for what I call HEC, and that's clear. But I want to talk to you about growth factors, because you mentioned that, you know, marrow suppression, both red cell and white cell mass, can be impacted. When do you use growth factors in a patient with TDXD?
So again, it's about supporting the patient as much as possible. So I'd rather, for anemia, neutropenia, support with blood transfusions, obviously checking basic things like hematinics, replacing iron, things we would do with any treatment. But I would like to use G-CSF as well to prevent and try and maintain dose intensity when I do see neutropenia. And one of the key things with the, you know, you mentioned antiemetics, it's really important to preempt this and use potent antiemetic regimens. And I know over the years, you know, three agents have been used, like the three agents, you know, thinking about neurokinin antagonists, serotonin antagonists, and also dexamethasone, but also having a good escalation plan and supporting the patients. In terms of, you know, potential other HER2-directed ADCs that we may have been familiar with. For example, you know, one of the first in breast cancer, T-DM1, side effect profiles of ADCs are different. It's not just, there are some class effects, but also each individual ADC may have different side effects. So for example, with T-DM1, thrombocytopenia was notable, and also hepatotoxicity. We're used to now monitoring patients for cardiotoxicity with HER2-directed therapies. And also we're very aware from many drugs that we're using now as anti-cancer therapy, like immunotherapy, but also other ADCs, about interstitial lung disease and pneumonitis. So that's really important to mention here. Drug-related ILD or pneumonitis with T-DXd was around 10% of patients. The majority are low grade, so grade 1 or grade 2, but there have been grade 3 events and also fatal drug-related cases of ILD pneumonitis. So drug-related deaths was around 1.5%. So it's really important, I'm sure we'll get onto that, you know, with regards to looking out for rarer but more serious side effects and proactive identification and management early.
That's really helpful. I like what you said. Although we'll never really know what the importance of dose intensification is, granted, the starting dose is 5.4 milligrams per kilogram. First reduction is 4.4, second is 3.2. So 5.4, 4.4, and 3.2. But I try to maintain dose intensity if possible without obviously hurting the patient and being very sensitive about that. I want to ask you a challenging question, one that was asked me the other day. It is that we monitor the lungs generally with a CAT scan. And we do that, you know, sort of routinely. Is scanning the bases enough, such as we see in an abdominal and pelvic CT scan in the tumors that you and I treat? Or do you need to scan the entire lung fields to screen for ILD pneumonitis?
So I would routinely scan the whole lung field. So do a CT chest, you know, abdomen and pelvis, obviously, as part of the assessment. But I would do certainly the whole lung, as we did in the clinical trials. And look, it is really important, you know, with regards to the toxicities that we've highlighted. But I think it's very important to also look at drug discontinuation rates due to adverse events. And this was actually less than 10%. This was around 8.6%, and dose reductions were in around 20% of patients. And I think as we use this more in practice, we're learning about this drug more across many tumor types, phase 3 studies, that will be more familiar and comfortable with dose reductions and dose modifications, but also maintaining patients, re-challenging patients safely while supporting patients.
I'm having a lot of fun here. I really am enjoying this. So as you know, for PARP inhibitors and mirvetuximab soravtansine, another antibody drug conjugate, there is a class effect of pneumonitis or interstitial lung disease. It's different though, just what you said. So for in those situations, grade 1, which is asymptomatic, just the, you know, fluffy interstitial infiltrates, you treat through it. But in T-DXd, grade 1, you interrupt. Is that right?
So I think that the key things I read, also just thinking about toxicities, there was a very nice article by Tarantino and colleagues using this 5S rule. This was really about screening. So it's about highlighting, because that grade 1, as you mentioned, asymptomatic is important to pick up on. And we're getting better at that because we're scanning more and including the chest. And therefore, we're probably picking up more grade 1 lung toxicities because we're looking for it. I think that's really important. It's also really important to think about risk factors and learning from breast colleagues who've been using this for longer, thinking about if they've had prior pneumonitis or ILD with other drugs, you know, such as CDK4/6 inhibitors or everolimus or other ADCs or immunotherapy. So that was one of the S's, screening. And then scanning, we've talked about. S they use for synergy, but effectively, I think that means working together in a multidisciplinary format, linking in with respiratory physicians. The other S was about suspending treatment. So basically, dose interruptions, I'd include dose modifications, monitoring patients, and steroids. So steroids are the key. So thinking about the grade one here for TDXD, so I was reading a really nice article about this with regards to also sometimes treating with low dose steroids, even though patients are asymptomatic, in order to try to get that recovery sooner to continue. And obviously the dose is higher as you get different grades. So I think it's really about proactive management. And there's some really nice reviews on this, very nice TDXD management, not only with the summary of product characteristics, but also really nice reviews. I guess our breast colleagues have been spearheading this, using this, and we can learn a lot across the other tumor types from this with regards to, like, for example, gynecological cancers, learning from them about the management of ILD, particularly with this drug, because it can be different to other pneumonitis that we've seen with other drugs.
Yeah, so in my practice, grade one suspend, and I treat those patients because I'm only using it when there's cancer that I can measure and see, and I'm very eager to get the patient back on treatment. Grade two, higher dose steroids, permanently discontinue. So let's talk about what the S for synergy. Tell us about the multidisciplinary management of ADC toxicities. You mentioned the pulmonary specialist when there's lung toxicity. What else?
So I think with any new therapy, we're really used to this across cancers. We learned this with PARP inhibitors you mentioned earlier, but also immunotherapy has really paved the way, I think, across cancers. So new therapies, new side effects. So we need specialist expertise, really, in terms of expediting early management so we can keep patients on correctly for longer so that they have the best chance of deriving benefit from these effective anti-cancer therapies. So early identification to help, reverse deterioration and maintain patients on treatment. So I think for TDXD, it's really important to link in with respiratory and pulmonary services. It's also important thinking about potential cardiac toxicities, cardiologists, but also if patients have other side effects, for example, the optimal management of sickness, vomiting. And often I also work with palliative care teams, supportive symptom control teams, because it's about active management whilst on treatment of supporting patients through treatment. So what does that mean? Well, I think each hospital has to have good links, setting up their structure of who they refer to, how they highlight, how information gets back to us so we can action appropriately. Thinking about other ADCs, also ocular toxicities, which aren't so much of a problem with TDXD, but some other ADCs, that's very relevant, and hence we need expert advice and management.
I'd be lost without APPs, advanced practice providers, NPs and PAs, and quite frankly, I'd be lost without pharmacists. I don't know if you use pharmacists. My pharmacists are... It's not hard to be smarter than me, but they definitely are smarter than me. So in the last minute or two that's left, we just got back from ASCO. I was not surprised that there were several abstracts on HER2-based or directed antibody-drug conjugates. Give us a few tidbits of abstracts that you were interested in.
Sure. So I think thinking across tumor types, there was the DESTINY-Breast09 trial, and that was really notable, potential to establish a new first-line standard of care for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer, where basically the study found that TDXD with pertuzumab reduced the risk of disease progression or death by 44%. So that's really important. Similarly, another international phase 3 DESTINY-Gastric04 clinical trial found that second-line treatment with TDXD can help people with advanced HER2-positive, that's IHC3+, unresectable metastatic gastric cancers. And we know how poor survival can be there, and patients lived around 3 months longer. Say, focusing more on toxicity, I think it was really interesting to see an abstract, which was a multi-institutional real-world study looking at re-challenging the TDXD in patients after experiencing ILD. This is across 5 US institutions. There were around 143 patients that developed any grade of ILD, 45% permanently discontinued, but 75% of patients, who had the grade one and therefore eligible for re-challenge, were re-challenged. And 27% of those developed recurrent ILD, but they were mostly grade one. There were some grade two and three, but overall, these real world data showed that re-challenge after grade one is possible, it's feasible, and the recurrence of ILD is in about one in four and mostly low grade. And importantly, no patients in that cohort of real world study died from ILD after re-challenge. So shows support using this approach. We need to maximize, again, our interactions with lung specialists and you know, the potential to continue treatment. And finally, another really important from a patient and clinician perspective and survivorship perspective, there was an abstract addressing toxicity of hair loss with TDXD and scalp cooling as a prospective phase two study. 40 patients, so not huge numbers, but important study. And in this small study, there was no significant difference with scalp cooling or not in terms of hair preservation. So disappointing, but important and relevant that scalp cooling isn't necessarily going to work with all chemotherapy or ADCs.
So that's all the time we have today. You know, I really want to thank you for this today, but more importantly, what you've done to bring new medicines to the clinic. And I absolutely recognize and I'm grateful for your contribution to TDXD and other medications. I won't go through them here because we don't have enough time, but I love to read the papers that you write. And I really enjoyed this. I also want to thank our listeners for joining us. Please join me for our second podcast with Dr. Subham Pant, who will join me to discuss interpreting and integrating HER2 pathology across solid tumor types. Hopefully you're able to tune into that and also explore the many other CME programs that are distributed by the MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group, as you probably know, is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials, and I'd like to give a special thank and shout out to AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals and Daiichi Sankyo Inc., who provided unrestricted grant for this, hopefully you found, fair and balanced educational activity. Have a great day, and so long for now.